What was important to me in the tech due diligence conversations was really like making the team understand there is magic here, right? There's absolute magic here, and to mess with it and to not learn from it is a mistake.
Welcome to the Open at Intel podcast, where we're all about open source, from software to security to innovation and beyond. I'm your host, Catherine Druckmann, an open source evangelist at Intel, bringing you leading-edge, free-ranging conversations from some of the best minds in the open source community. Let's get into it.
At KubeCon in Paris, I sat down with Liz Rice of Isovalent and Stephen Augustus of Cisco to get the scoop on Cisco's acquisition of Isovalent, what's next for the respective teams, and the importance of maintaining community integrity post-acquisition. The acquisition has closed since we spoke, so congratulations to all involved, and cheers to the next chapter. Thank you, Stephen and Liz, for joining me today. You have both been on the podcast separately, and I hope everyone listening will go back and listen to those, and I'll link them in the description. But you're here with me together today because some interesting stuff has happened since last time I talked to both of you.
Yeah, I've heard a few things are going on.
I heard a rumor.
There is a rumor.
Yeah, so I'll just go there. So Cisco acquired Isovalent.
Yes, so Cisco has announced its intent to acquire Isovalent. And that will be coming up very soon. So the Cisco team, the Isovalent team, are pretty excited about it. How's it?
At time of recording, we're still not closed. But
yes.
I missed that part.
Yeah.
Yeah, but maybe by time of release, who knows?
That'd be nice.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. So that's an interesting story. What can you tell me?
Yeah, sure. So we're bringing together, we have a company of very awesome people. From the personal perspective, I love this. I absolutely love this. I love getting to be a part of some of the acquisition conversation. The folks at Isovalent are veterans, in the kernel, networking, cloud native, observability, security spaces for decades. And a lot of them are my former coworkers and really good friends now. So it's kind of cool to see traveling from startup to now coming back to being coworkers at Cisco.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. And how about you? What can you share about your
situation? I'm really excited about it. I can't really imagine a better place for our team to land. The team is coming along with this incredible sort of knowledge and I work with so many amazing talented people, and we're going to stay together as a team. This is the point. We go into Cisco's security unit, and I think our existing direction of travel is super well aligned with what you would imagine Cisco is going to be doing, and Cisco's kind of software business as well as complementing the hardware business.
Yeah, and I think, maybe we talk a little bit about like where we're positioned.
Yeah, you kind of started to answer the next question I was going to ask, which is, what does this alignment look like? Where do your interests really kind of converge?
Yeah, so for context, I work in Outshift, which is the incubation arm for Cisco. And recently we've had a bit of a aggregation of some very cool groups within Cisco. So I'm part of the CSDI group, our corporate strategy, development, and incubation, right? So I live kind of in the incubation arm, but my team has a global mandate. So Cisco Research and the OSPO, the Open Source Program Office within Cisco, we have a global mandate, right? So that means that every now and again, we get to work on things like mergers and acquisitions, right? And we get to have these really great conversations pre-close and post-close about where open source assets and teams may land. So in this case, our security business group, right? So that rolls into security and collab. So if you've heard of things like WebEx, the overarching group is both security and collaboration, right? They very specifically will be landing within Tom Gillis's group, Craig Connors, so their former VMware as well. Right, so they've been hanging out together for a while, and they're two of the folks that kind of cooked up the idea for Isovalent at Cisco.
Okay.
And from Isovalent's point of view, so many people have worked with Stephen before. Thomas Graf, one of our co-founders, has worked at Cisco before. Dan worked with some of these people at VMware before.
It just makes sense.
Nicira, exactly. Dan and Duffy. So it's
you know, coming it's together like a lot of good. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A lot of good people.
That's very cool. So the big question that I had on my mind was, what does this mean for example, the Cilium and eBPF communities?
Well, good things, you know. I mean, both Cilium and eBPF are open source projects, and that's not going to change. We've been investing tons of, you know, resources, people, talent in working on those projects for years. And now, instead of having to go out and raise money from VCs every couple of years, we have the backing of Cisco, who are, I think it's fair to say, enthusiastic about open source.
We like open source. We like, you know, we do a little networking every now and again. And, you know, I think the conversation whenever you have, you know, the corporate Goliath comes up and says like, oh, we're doing an acquisition. And Liz and I kind of talked about this during our Cloud Native Startup Fest talk. That's always one of the first questions that you get when you can kind of speak freely is so what's going to happen to the open source? Should we be looking for alternatives for these projects? And no, right? Same business as usual, right? Business as usual, I think, with the backing of the company that really cares and is invested in the outcome. Right?
Well, I would think Cisco would place a high value on maintaining the community integrity and all of that of these projects because they're valuable. I mean, it's...
Yeah. Absolutely. I think when you look at acquisitions, like, you know, tech and talent is a huge component of this, right? And I, as we were doing kind of the announcement call for Isovalence, I think some of our leadership was talking through strategy, I think on the product side, and I came in and I said, like, I don't care about the products. I don't care about the products at all because I know these people. I know these people, and I know these are some of the most brilliant people in the industry, and I know they have the capability of building anything that you point them at. Right. Yeah. So it is going to be, I think it's a powerful time for SBG. And I think some of the implications kind of across our product portfolio within Cisco, not just on the security side, but really across the stack. Right. Working with eBPF opens up a lot of possibilities, right, to really dig into the way your infrastructure is observed and built. Right. Mm. So
and I think for Dan and Thomas, our co-founders, mm-hmm. you know, it was really important that if we're going to be acquired, it has to be, you know, a culture that fits with our culture and a vision that fits with our culture. You know, Thomas has talked early internally about, you know, how, you know, he spent the last 7 years building this amazing team, you know, and it's super important that that continues. You know, this is, and it is valuable. It, you know, our whole is greater than our sum of our parts. Yeah. And I think that's being recognized by the Cisco team as well.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, so if you talk about, you know, kind of the potential, right? There's a lot of potential here. I wondered if you could both maybe talk about, like, what does the next year look like? Or what could it look like in your fantasy?
Yeah, so I think, you know, and a lot of leadership will say this, you know, it's the... We're coming in and we're not trying to shake it up or anything like that. I think, you know, so first things first, Isovalent lands as an entire group. Right? Nothing changes there. And I think for what was important to me in kind of in the tech due diligence conversations was really like making the team understand there is magic here, right? There's absolute magic here, and to mess with it and to not learn from it is a mistake. So first things first, I think we're going to learn the model. I'm, you know, selfishly going to use it as an opportunity to, like, this is the blueprint of what open source delivery could look like at Cisco, right? This is a model that we should try to replicate across business groups, right? So I think when we talk about running, doing open source strategy for Cisco, like, what does that mean? Is there like one cohesive strategy? After you do it for a while, you realize, no, there isn't, right?
Okay.
It's impossible to be head of open source at Cisco. In terms of like having a single strategy, you need to have a strategy for every business group that you encounter.
Okay.
And that becomes, that is wholly hinged on being able to tap into open source advocates, evangelists, whatever you want to call champions within each business group to kind of steer that direction. So like Liz and I and Craig, who is the VP of engineering, where like Isovalent will be landing in that group. We are going to be partnering very closely, basically like week by week to make sure like, what do we need to tweak? What do we need to learn? What are we? Is there something going wrong? Are we hearing weird stuff? So from my side, we have, I think it's a really, really fun time at Cisco, in particular for open source. We've got the So we've closed, you know, at the time of recording, we've closed Splunk a few days ago, right? So Splunk has major ties in the OpenTelemetry community. Isovalent is coming up next. We've just hired my peer in legal. So newly, there is an SVP of IP and tech. We have a new open source legal director. We're hiring more folks on that team as well. So and we're starting to look at more of our contribution policies and the employee IP agreement and all these fun things that will accelerate the way that people are contributing to open source across Cisco, right? So Isovalent is a huge part of the story and saying, like, this is a model that we should aspire to. How can we replicate that?
It's very painting a very interesting picture, especially like you mentioned Splunk. That's a kind of an interesting piece of the puzzle here. Like the gears are turning.
Observing some
things. Yeah, I'm observing. Yes, that's a good word. Incidentally, some of my favorite retro swag t-shirts came from Splunk in their early days. I'm sure you've seen them. Probably can't say them out loud on the recording, but they're funny. Anyway, yeah, so this is an interesting, the meeting of some very interesting, great technology in minds here, the potential is quite impressive. Since I talked to you, Liz, when was that? In November at KubeCon in Chicago, I do hear more and more about interesting use cases for eBPF.
Right.
And I try to like clue in a little bit more, you know, now that I have a little bit more context. And I just wondered, you know, again, looking at kind of the roadmap of all of the interesting potential, what are you the most excited about?
I think I'm probably most excited about security. I do have
security,
a bit of a background in security recently. And the ability to use eBPF for this incredibly low overhead way to observe events and, you know, filter them. One of the things that we can do with Cilium Tetragon, which is our kind of security oriented part of the project, we can filter events within the kernel. And it just leads to this incredibly low overhead for generating events that you're interested in from a security perspective, like opening a sensitive file or creating a network connection. You don't want to know about every single file access that happens. You don't want to know about every single network connection. You want to know when it looks suspicious.
Right.
And that kind of ability to do that filtering in the kernel rather than pushing everything into user space makes things so much more efficient. So I think there's going to be quite a... it opens up the possibility for a lot more use of this kind of runtime security information that we can detect and generate. And interestingly, one of the places that you can send those kind of events is into Splunk. So it's all kind of fits together.
Yeah. I think there's definitely a contextual angle as well where I know we've, you know, I think if you're at KubeCon, you've heard AI 20 billion times.
Yes.
At least, right?
Yes, I have.
But I think one
I'm
of the really...
You said it first.
Yeah, I think one of the really interesting things is, so for context, I've been working on the... In the past, I'm one of the co-creators of the generative AI policy for Cisco.
Okay.
And that also has ties into open source, because the reason the legal team reached out was because we dropped a position statement regarding GitHub Copilot in the past, right? And they're like, you said good words. Let's talk to you again. But I think one of the most powerful things about a larger company getting into the AI space is, like, there's lots of stuff for us to build, right? We could build something net new. But I think one of the power, one of the key powers that we have is that we're sitting on decades of experience,
yeah. Shoulders,
right?
Shoulders of giants and all
you
that.
Know?
Yeah.
And very specifically, like the lake of data that is sitting within Cisco around how people approach networking, right? Mm. So I do see a world where you can help contextualize some of those security decisions based on what we've seen in the network in the past, right? And I don't think I'm leaking anything. Nothing has happened yet, but, like, you know, things are coming. I think with all of the the incubation teams, as well as Isovalent coming in soon, and Splunk having just come in, I think there is a big conversation to be had with some of these business groups about how we can weave these stories together. Right? What is the better together story? What is the peanut butter chocolate? Right?
I was kind of thinking in those terms. Like when you have this, when things like this kind of come to fruition, right? And you kind of You've picked this kind of dream team and everybody comes together. You must be kind of fantasizing about about all these fantastic problems you could solve, right?
And yeah. This is I maybe liken this to Isovalent is the popular girl in high school, right? And it's prom is coming up, right?
She said yes.
She said yes, right? And but also there are a lot of people reaching out to me, even pretty close. How do we get tapped in? How do we get tapped in? How do we start having that conversation, right? So it's happening from the Outshift side. It's happening from like business groups across Cisco, right? So I think that first, you were talking to like, what is the first, quarter look like, first 100 days or so, right? That is going to be kind of setting the standard for communication across Cisco, right? And, part of Liz's role, and Liz, you can speak a little more to it, is what does it look like to put a fabric on top of the open source conversation within the security business group? And how can we weave that into the product conversations that we're having across Cisco, right? Because it's not stuff that happens in isolation, right?
Yeah. And how do we enable those conversations and at the same time kind of protect our existing mission? Because I think, there's so many possibilities and so many different directions we could go. And we need to be very strategic about the things that we need to prioritize.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest concerns people often have outside of that open source story that we were talking about a little bit, like what happens to the stuff that you're already maintaining? It's also, we have customers, as Isovalent, like they have customers. And I think one of the biggest things that people are scared about in acquisition scenarios is how can we keep the momentum? How can we maintain that customer experience, right? That high level of, and working with folks, working with folks on the solutions architecture side and on the CRE team, the customer reliability engineering teams, and the field engineering teams that are currently at Isovalent but have been in companies with me in the past, like the level of care to that customer experience is paramount, right? Okay. I think a key component of that first 100 days is, of course, keeping the momentum with customers and making sure that they understand that like this is good. This is good. This is excellent, right?
We talk a lot in Isovalent about this sort of pillars of kind of what our culture is built on. And it's amazing team, building amazing technology, and making our customers successful. And yeah, all of those things are kind of just table stakes for us, whatever we do next.
Yeah.
And so keeping our customers successful, keeping them engaged with what we're doing, that's critical. Yeah.
It's kind of funny to me because hearing you talk through the issues that I've seen in other acquisitions, and especially when open source projects are involved, that kind of reassurance and whatnot. And it's funny because from my perspective, because I know who you are, right? And I know the parties involved. I'm just like, well, this is cool. It is the cool kids kind of getting together. And I'm kind of observing from a distance going like, oh, what could they do here? But it is kind of a nice reminder that if you're not necessarily in it, from looking at it from my perspective, which I don't expect other people, to always do, that you would need to kind of have that reassurance and that kind of continuity conversation. And that is kind of interesting to me because that's not where my mind went in the first place. Even though, of course, I know I've been around, I've seen these things. Yeah. What's going to happen to that project? The company just got bought. That hasn't occurred to me, but just because I know that y'all are all pretty cool. But.
Yeah. I think proof is always in the pudding, right? We can say anything that we want on stage. and anything can happen, right? But I think the team is invested in making sure that is true. I think it's beyond just, again, we're kind of putting together all of this wonderful, brilliant open source talent, right? And it behooves us, not just from a company perspective, but also from an individual reputational perspective, sure. Right? To be right, right? Yeah. So I think we're all marching towards that outcome with that top of mind too, right? Yeah. This is our reputations to do this right.
Yeah, right. And we're talking about Cisco, right? Not... Yeah. Which is it? I, at this point, I would still... An iconic tech company in the U.S. anyway.
We do okay.
Yeah, I mean, for those of us, can I say, of a certain age, Cisco was a big deal early on. So, it's something a highly respected name, so you can't kind of can't play with it. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up, you know, when I started my career, the two books that I picked up were, the first two books I picked up were a study guide for the MTSE, the Microsoft's certified systems engineer, and then CCNA, right? And that was like, I read them cover to cover. So to think like getting my start in like kind of network and security engineering and routing, and to fast forward, you know, a decade and some change, to be at Cisco, right?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I felt the same way about Intel. I get it.
Yeah.
There's a certain, I don't know, it's kind of nerd cred
it's
or something.
Surreal, right?
Yeah, it is a bit, yeah.
Yeah, the companies that were kind of foundational.
Yes, foundational tech.
The tech that we all use. You know,
yeah,
everybody has, like, you know, Cisco routers.
Invented here.
Everybody
like,
has
literally,
Intel
actually invented here. Here.
Yeah. Actually invented here.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So I feel like we've covered actually quite a lot in a short period of time, but I feel like I'm missing something here. There's something that you wanted to share that I haven't gotten to, so... Want to make sure we get to it. Sorry, not to put you on the spot, but you know. Anyway, there's so much going on. I still kind of want to hear more details about this dream data juggernaut project that you're going to come up with. The little AI genius in there.
Yeah. So I think you know, in the general case, Cisco has been kind of working on this concept of AI assistance, right? And I'm not going to spend too much time on AI because you've definitely heard it enough the last year or so, right? But. But I think, you know, you have a few different ways that you can play the game, right? You can come out with this. So my group Outshift is working on like, what is the next new, so our charter is effectively, what is the next new thing that we're going to build for Cisco? And the charter of other business groups may be, how can we integrate into existing services? Right. So I think I remember going to Microsoft Build last year. Right. And I did like some of the AI workshops and stuff. And you know, they were like, we have over 1800 connectors, like AI connectors within our product suites already. And you're like, oh, wow. Like they're on the move. Right. And there's a certain level of penetration that you'll see because people are already using those products. Right. So I think That is definitely one of the paths that we're taking across business groups. How can we enrich the experience that you're already having with this product? So if you look at something like Cisco WebEx, you've got WebEx, the AI assistant, right? And sometimes I forget that AI assistant's on, right? And it'll send me, you know, it'll send me a summary of the meeting and it'll go like, here are the meeting highlights. Here are the action items from the meeting, right? And you're like, oh, the stuff that I needed to do, this is really, yeah, I love this, right? So like getting, you know, I think getting used to having it enrich the experience and then also realizing that people, it is important to understand that like people still make the decisions. AI is not taking your job.
No.
AI is here to enrich the way that you do your job. If you feel that AI is taking your job, then you should be doing something slightly different, right? So like I think we still are responsible for the supervision and how we can bring teaching people how to supervise a bit better into the story is one of the conversations that we're having at Cisco.
I also, as an industry, I think we are very much in sort of hype mode around power of AI.
and the
fact that it presents in such a kind of human-like way when you interact with these things, I think that's giving us a bit of a false impression about quite how capable some of these systems are. You know, I am sure amazing things are going to happen in the future based on AI, but I think some of the where we are today is not quite as amazing as people kind of want to believe.
It's ultimately just processing a lot of data faster than other methods.
Yeah,
basically, right?
And because it can look such a sort of human-like language, we tend to imbue it with more intelligence than is really there.
That's fair.
I'd mentioned it earlier, but I think being able to get to the can you provide me something that's contextually useful for my use case, right? As opposed to like, you know, you go to insert AI product here assistant, you know, that you can just kind of type in and you get an answer, right? But doing that, you know, kind of from the Cisco lens, you're like, oh, tell me about my network state potentially, right? That is powerful, right? Or tell me why I'm getting this routing loop, or tell me why, you know, or like, what's the optimal VLAN configuration over here, and et cetera, et cetera. And again, not just on the networking side, right? This is going to have applications on security and observability.
The possibilities are literally endless. Mm. Yeah, I think of all the kind of low-hanging, mundane security fruit that AI can eventually help with, right? Yeah. Here, you know, audit my role-based access control. You know, absolutely. Do it for me, so because it's tedious and there's a lot of it. Just figure it out, right?
Yeah, or another example that I've seen that is quite successful is AWS Q, I believe it's called, and you can kind of go in and it's really just giving you relevant bits out of the documentation, but it saves you looking up the relevant bits. You know, so you can say, how do I configure this?
Yeah.
And it's quicker than...
I think about like AI on top of Kubernetes documentation, for example, right? You know, like imagine someone getting started and getting getting a lens into like, oh, well, I shouldn't use this API in this way, right? You know, for example, right?
And it's like having a buddy who's read the documentation.
Exactly.
That's great. Everybody needs a tech buddy. Well, this is great. I did want to mention one thing because, you know, Cisco, back in the day, and this is a kind of a kudos for respecting open source communities. So back in the day, I used to work for Linux Journal for many, many years, back when that was a thing. And we always used WebEx for our webinars because there was no other platform that could reliably work on desktop Linux. I don't know if you knew that you were the only one, because we tried. I mean, you know, because people had opinions and sometimes people would want to use something else, but we're like, nope, it's really WebEx.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there's still a lot of opinions and everyone has a, you know, this video conferencing or communication solution doesn't quite work for me. It's like, there is a lot to be said about that, you know, the specific use cases, right? So it's like, it's cool that WebEx is in that space. It's cool to come back to WebEx after a really long time. And like, yeah, so it's going on 3 years for me at Cisco. And I'm like, it's even better than it was, you know, since I last touched it, right?
No. That's definitely been my experience. Yeah. I mean, I've had to use it a few times in the last few weeks.
Yeah,
and I
hadn't
used it for years before that. And it's definitely a lot better than I remember.
It's just, it's funny to think, because, you know, desktop Linux users didn't get a lot of love.
I still don't, to be honest. Is 2024 the year of Linux on the desktop?
The year of Linux on the desktop? It might be. I don't know. One hopes.
Year plus plus.
Ask, where's George Castro? I don't know. Anyway. One hopes. But anyway, thank you both so much. This has been fantastic. I enjoy speaking with both of you. You're both so much fun.
Always a pleasure, Catherine.
And I'm just, you know, congratulations. I hope when this comes out, everything's done and sealed and signed and whatever you say. And
we will say thank you from our Cisco email addresses, right?
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And I can't wait to see what happens in the next year. I want to see kind of fun little projects you cook up and...
invite us back in the next, you know, KubeCon.
Salt
Lake. The next thing. I don't know if we're allowed to say what that is.
We know. You'll find out soon, listeners.
Yes. Okay, well, thank you both so much. It's been a great time. Again.
Pleasure.
You've been listening to Open at Intel. Be sure to check out more from the Open at Intel podcast at open.intel.com/podcast and at Open at Intel on Twitter. We hope you join us again next time to geek out about open source.